Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Would you believe it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century, from I Love Lucy to News Radio. I'm your TV guide, Brett White. I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com, and this week I am joined by one of my old collaborators from Left Handed Radio, Adam Bozarth. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Brett. How are you?
What up?
Not much. I'm doing well. I'm doing very well.
Yeah, I wanted to talk briefly a bit about the old podcast that has clawed its way out of the iTunes grave.
Yeah, I mean, pod fade goes both ways, you know.
Yeah.
It fades out and it fades in again, and we've been happy to do it. It's been a lot of fun kind of reconnecting with doing all this stuff, and also not writing as much material beforehand and just doing a lot more improvised material. It's a lot of fun just capturing that lightning in a bottle and turning that into stuff. So it's fun kind of giving it a new direction now.
For those that aren't familiar, Left Handed Radio is a sketch. It was the very first audio sketch podcast.
Yeah, I believe so.
That's what I'm going to say. I mean, but like also maybe, right? I mean, well, when was the first episode released? 2010?
October 2010, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, we didn't invent it, but we really perfected it?
Well, now you see a bunch of other, there are a whole lot of these things out there now. The audio sketch podcast is a thing.
Well, no, it's a great idea.
Yeah. It's old radio plays, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's a lot, and it's a lot of fun to do. Yeah, no, I mean, I can't believe we got away with it for as long as we did without anybody kind of crowding us. I mean, there's like Super Ego, and there's also a Canadian sketch group called The Sunday Service, which did a very similar kind of thing. But yeah, now we're trying to just do material, and one thing we've been doing is trying to go back into the archive and reinventing stuff and making animation and things for Instagram. So definitely follow us on Instagram if you want to know what we're about. You can see some clips of our show as well as some little animated pieces.
Is that LH? Wait, is it just Left Handed Radio on Instagram?
Yes, Left Handed Radio on Instagram.
Got that domain
handle.
Got that handle. Well,
we did not secure Instagram.com. If we did, I don't think I'd be working this hard on sketch comedy for podcasts.
Jesus. Yeah. But you know who does work hard? Spies.
Spies.
This week, we're traveling to September 18th, 1965. Once a Thief ruled the box office, Help by the Beatles topped the charts, and NBC aired the Get Smart pilot titled Mr. Big. Adam, you must have seen Mr. Big before today.
Well, yeah, I did. I checked it out because the entire collection's on iTunes, which I had no idea. I thought about downloading like the first season to try to watch that to get a little bit more familiar with things, but it was like 36 episodes.
Yeah, it's
long.
A lot. Well, so a couple months ago, iTunes had a sale where every season of Get Smart was $5.
Whoa.
And so I bought all of it because I think it averaged out to like a dime an episode or something crazy like that. And I was like, I can't pass this up. And it stayed that way for like a week, but now it's back to like $20 a season, which again, $20 is a lot of money of our generation, which is used to like stealing everything or getting everything on streaming. We're not used to paying for things. But I'm also like, well, $20 for, I don't know, 26 episodes of television is insane. It's
yeah,
so
and
cheap.
it's really well crafted too, which is one thing that like I wasn't expecting that from the pilot was like how well directed it was.
Yeah. Hey, what is your history with Get Smart?
So that was definitely one of those shows that was always in reruns when I was a kid with cable in the Midwest. And
it was a
like,
Nick at Night show for me, definitely.
Definitely a Nick at Night show. And I think it sometimes would air on like Sunday morning, sometimes on like USA Network or TNT or something like that. You know, I mean, if not that, then something like that, you know.
And we also grew up in the age of, like, the Get Smart reunions because there was, what, Get Smart Again. I remember that TV movie happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, like, all into watching that TV movie. And then, as I discovered today, there was a sequel series in 1995.
That
starred Andy Dick as their son.
Ugh.
Which, oh, boy.
Yeah, that...
Glad that didn't go anywhere. But that would have also ruined news radio if that had gone. So, like, I guess, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, easy come, easy go, I guess. it was also, Maxwell Smart was just one of those pop culture figures that was just in the house, sort of. You know, like, it was a voice that my dad would do every once in a while, you know, do just all, you know, would you believe two cops in a rowboat?
Yeah.
And I'm like, it sounds like a lot of fun to do. And it,
the old something trick.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Well, he also was the voice of Inspector Gadget, which was like the other pillar of
that too. Yeah.
You know, pre-kindergarten, like spy stuff that I watched. Because like Get Smart, very smart show, but it's also, if you watch anything other than the pilot, it's a very colorful show.
Yes.
With a lot of like fun special effects. So I think I watched that show from as young as I can remember, like that and the Batman 66, very similar.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So similar. Like, there's a little bit more of like a self-awareness in Get Smart, though. That's like played straight in Batman.
Yeah. Batman's just a free-willing weirdo time.
Everybody's committing so hard in Batman, but there's a little bit of a wink in Get Smart. But yeah, that's sort of like you mentioned, the pilot is in black and white. It's not like, that's something that was a little disappointing for me for revisiting, was like, it is such a colorful and outlandish show. And so to see like this sort of scaled down pilot version of it was kind of strange.
Yeah. So this week on Must Have Seen TV, we're going to be talking about the Get Smart episode Mr. Big. It is the first episode of season one and was written by, drumroll, Mel Brooks and Buck Henry, and directed by Howard Morris. Here is how iTunes describes the episode. Maxwell Smart takes on a villain who threatens NYC with a device called the Intheramo. Adam, how accurate is that description?
It's very accurate.
That's exactly
what happens, and it's very simple.
iTunes just gets right to the point. So the episode, like the start of the series, as we said, is in black and white, which is so odd to see. It's only this one episode.
Mm-hmm.
And this is fall 65, so like things were definitely making the jump to color at this time. I guess maybe you shoot things in black and white for a pilot because it was probably cheaper, maybe?
Yeah, totally. I think so. It seemed like it was cheap. Like there's also just a few shots that kind of belay sort of the like the cheap production of it.
Yeah, there's a real run and gun style to it in a weird way for a kind of for a 60s sitcom. It honestly feels like they are on location with a handheld at times.
Oh yeah, I mean like there's things about it that kind of remind me of an old MST3K movie because the laboratory they go to is clearly the Paramount lot in Hollywood. Yeah. It's doesn't look anything like New York City. Like they're on a boat that's supposed to be out at sea in the New York Harbor, but it's just clearly still stuck in the dock somewhere, you know, and
but
in
also
Marina
like
Del
those
Rey.
Shots, it's really cool to see, like, there are some shots of, like, you know, from, like, down low or, like, up high of, like, Maxwell Smart in his suit on this garbage dinghy. And it's, like, this is, it's weirdly cinematic in a strange way.
Yeah, all those like really like the pull-in close-ups and all of those other things. Like, it's very tightly shot, I think, yeah, you know, because of the cheapness, but it gives it a weird like cinematic quality that it wasn't expecting.
No, yeah. So the very first shot of the entire series is like the Capitol building in DC, and it's like a very like voiceover, yeah, a very serious voiceover of like,
this is Washington, DC. Somewhere in this city is the headquarters of a top secret organization known as Control. Its business is counter-espionage.
And we go to we catch up with Maxwell Smart in like a symphony. He's like at a concert, a show.
Yeah, the symphony. He's, yeah, seeing the symphony orchestra. It's like the world's first cell phone gag.
Yeah, which I realize watching us now of like, oh man, cell phones just make so much of this obsolete. Or like, it's because the whole big joke is all of a sudden everyone hears a telephone ringing, which nowadays, like, that is a thing.
Yeah, like the lead up is like the whole premise of his job is to be discreet and unrecognizable, and then all of a sudden an old Bakelite telephone starts ringing and everybody starts looking at him and he just gets up and walks out of the, yeah, it's like that must have been outlandishly funny.
Yeah. And it's still it, like, the fact that he goes, he locks himself in a closet to answer the phone, and he takes off his shoe, and his phone is a shoe, which is still, like, I mean, that's one of the most iconic visuals of the entire series.
With a rotary dial.
Yeah, with a rotary dial, a little flip-out thing that he talks into.
Yeah, there's those, that's the thing that I liked about Get Smart that I thought seemed absent from the Steve Carell movie, which I wasn't interested in, was that there's like that sort of impracticality and the mundanity of it. Like when he goes in to see the head of Control and he punches in,
yeah, he like an old time clock,
yeah, like, like, it, there's just that kind of those little touches to it where it just seems like this doesn't seem like it's a glamorous job. This actually seems like it stinks to do this.
Well, yeah, even when he's talking to Chief is like, you know, we assign things in a certain order. And it's just like, it's your turn. Yeah. Is the only reason that he's getting this job. So he answers the phone and it's like, you gotta come quickly, like chaos, whatever. He gets locked. When he finally gets out, this is a really funny gag of he gets into his car and then he like, he doesn't peel out, but he like cool, like drives the convertible around and then it circles back around and then parallel parks on the other side of the street.
Very Brooksian.
And then we get the opening. So the opening is one of the most iconic openings of a TV show ever, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you think this is where Mystery Science Theater got their opening from?
Oh, totally. I mean, the idea of them going through those doors, like, I think that they said that they got that idea initially from Get Smart, like, that series of doors. Just, there's that feeling of separation that it creates. Yeah, obviously. I mean, but, like, as soon as I watch it, even, like, in black and white, you just go like, oh yeah, that's where they stole that from.
Yeah. And that the theme song is so good. The music throughout this entire thing, just like stepping back to talk about the music, it's all it's really scored. Like, this is a very spy score.
Yeah.
When was the first James Bond movie? That's something I should have looked up beforehand. What was the first James Bond movie?
Doctor it was no. It was Dr. James, no.
Dr. No.
1962.
Okay, yeah, so because this does seem like this is very much a part of the big spy wave of the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really interesting because they're really, like, pulling in. It's so interesting how that genre, like, crystallized really quickly. Because if Dr. No happened in, you know, 62, then, like, 3 years later, it's like these are all the same tropes that we still see in spy things today. Like, Alias did all this stuff. You know, there's the gadget section. There's, like, the undercover section. There's the We Got Captured section. Austin Powers did all this. What are the current spy things? I never watched The Americans. Did The Americans have shoe phones?
Yeah, no. I don't know. I didn't watch The Americans.
But it is interesting to me that, like, the spy genre just, like, hit so hard and so fast, and everyone kind of just decided, yeah, this is what it is, and then Get Smart's like, cool, we're gonna just tear it apart every week. And it worked.
Yeah, that everybody had enough familiarity with that stuff that they could make those jokes.
It's wild. So we get to see one of the big, he gets the mission first, I guess, which is a very elaborate pun. of Dante's Inferno.
Yes. Yes, Dante's Inferno.
So there's Hugo Dante, a mad scientist from Long Island. I like that he's also like from Long Island. It makes me wonder, what was Long Island like in the 60s? Because we know what Long Island is like now. Like,
I think it's about the same, I guess.
There's still like Long Island mediums.
Yeah, I guess eventually he's a very stereotypical Germanic accent as soon as he shows up at the very end.
Yeah, he's Hugo Dante, and he's being held by ransom by Mr. Big, not the late 80s, early 90s hair metal band.
And not the same Mr. Big from Sex and the City.
And
either.
Not Mr. Bigglesworth from Austin Powers.
No.
He's being held for ransom for $100 million, which is, like, that's still steep today.
I thought it's $1 million.
Well, I thought it was $100 million. Was it 100 million or 1 million?
I think it's just a million.
Okay, well then, if it's a million,
he's
then
holding
it's,
the world
if it's a million, then it's the Austin Powers joke of $1 million.
Exactly, yeah.
How much did you love Austin Powers?
How much did I love Austin Powers? I definitely, that was one of those movies that got rewatched a lot on DVD.
Yeah.
You know, and then the second movie I was like super excited for and didn't watch as many times. I think I only watched Goldmember once. And was like, okay.
We got it. It just seems like we're going to be talking a lot about Austin Powers inadvertently in this, because these are like the two big spy parodies. In like Flint didn't really stick around.
No, yeah, they only did two of those,
yeah.
Right?
So,
and I don't really know what his thing was, other than it was just supposed to be kind of funny.
Then we get one of the big gags of the entire series, we get the Cone of Silence.
How much do you know about chaos?
What did you say, sir?
What? Chaos.
Oh, chaos. Yes, of course. Well, that's an international criminal organization that was founded, I think in 1957.
How's that?
57.
What? 57. Agent 57 is in Hong Kong. Hong Kong.
What about Hong Kong?
What?
Hong Kong.
Why are we talking about Hong Kong?
Like, right there.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah.
At the top.
Don't they do that every episode?
I think they do it every episode. I mean, like, there are, like, what, three jokes that become every single episode jokes? So there's the Cone of Silence, and then there's, like, the old blank trick. He said, like, that's one of his catchphrases. And then also the, like, would you believe 7? Would you believe 6? Would you believe 2 cops in a rowboat?
Does Agent 34 show up?
Yeah, Agent 34 is hanging out in the locker.
Yeah, I mean, like, does he show up in the rest of the series?
I don't know, so who was Laramie?
Laramie?
Wasn't there a guy named Laramie? This is the thing. I don't know if Agent 34 does, but I feel like there is a recurring gag of a spy who, is...
He's just always in the...
In compromising positions?
Always in... Yeah, I forget. Yeah.
So the Cone of Silence bit is exactly what it sounds like. They dropped it on the Cone of Silence, which is just... This is another, like, Mystery Science Theater-y kind of thing, because it's just, like, a weird plexiglass bubble.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even airtight. Like, I don't even know how it would work, actually.
I mean, I don't know how it's supposed to work. I don't know its intended purpose. Like, I really don't get how even how in fiction it's supposed to work.
And it works too well because they can't hear.
Yeah, I like how it's all warped, though, and you can see, like, their faces get all warped through the plexiglass. It's such a great, fun, goofy shot.
Yeah.
Which adds a little bit to this, like, kind of, you know, C-plus joke of, you know, like, what?
Well, this was written by Mel Brooks and Buck Henry. I honestly, like, Mel Brooks' filmography is actually kind of a blank for me up until, like, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. I've seen Men in Tights. Oh, my God, that might be the only one I've seen.
Yeah, I think, unless you saw Dracula Dead and Loving It, I think, you know...
My dad wanted to see it, but we did not.
Your dad wanted to see it.
So did Mel Brooks and... Were Mel Brooks and Buck Henry writing partners?
They never really, to my knowledge, I mean, they really never worked on anything together. Probably, like, if they were maybe staffed in the same room on some show, but I'm not uncertain how they came together to work on this, other than they probably were both pitching spy comedies at the same time.
You two work on
this. And maybe got together to work on it. I mean, this is definitely, like, before Brooks's film career takes off.
Yeah, this is very early. And this is, like, I know Buck Henry from just being, like, he hosted SNL, what, 20 times or something in the first 5 years?
Yeah, he was constantly on, and he played like that's a better time of SNL, when you would get like weird actor writers like Buck Henry to constantly be on the show.
Now it's like Rachel Brosnahan is going to host the first episode back in 2019. It's like, we had Buck Henry 30 years ago. He also played Liz Lemon's dad on 30 Rock, so newer people might know him from that role. And he also wrote a bad movie called First Family from 1980, which starred Bob Newhart as the president. From Clue.
Oh, Madeline Kahn
as the first lady and Gilda Radner as their daughter. It's an amazing cast, and it's just doesn't really hang together. You can rent that on iTunes, as I, of course, have.
This is also after... Get Smart comes after Brooks won an Academy Award.
Oh, wow.
I bet you didn't know this. He won a short subject Academy Award for a short film he did called The Critic, which if you've never seen it before, definitely, like, it's on YouTube for free. Oh. It's very short. It's very short and simple, and if you've never seen any of Brooks's work, it's pretty much this.
It's a comedy, short won an Oscar.
Yeah, wow. So it not to give too much of it away, when it begins, it looks like it's going to be this sort of abstract, surreal, artistic piece.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be, like, really surreal, but quaint and musical and pleasant. And then all of a sudden you just hear, like, Brooks in, like, his very heavy Brooklyn accent, like, what is this? Was this a shape? The thing? You got two things on screen? This is the story of two things, I guess. You know, it just, so, you know, like, you just, he's commenting on this, you know, what's supposed to be a very serious cinematic experience.
That is amazing. That won an Oscar. That's great.
I think that's how he has an EGOT.
Yeah, I was wondering if he, yeah.
So
he wins an Oscar, and then he jumps right to NBC's Get Smart. But they don't stick around. Like, neither of them become the showrunners of Get Smart, I don't believe.
No, I don't think so at all. I don't think they ever write on it ever again, either.
Yeah. So after the Cone of Silence is when we get the meeting, we are introduced to K-13, a.k.a. Fang. I wrote down, he's just a big, dumb dog.
You're expecting
like a German Shepherd or like something like kind of like sleek. But he's just
He looks like a Labradoodle.
Yeah, he's just like a big, fluffy, kind of like dopey-looking dog.
Uh-huh.
And I love him. So that's when he's going to the train station to meet with Agent 99, who he is told he'll be able to identify because 99 will know the secret code, which is Mets win a doubleheader. Or did you see the Mets win a doubleheader?
Such a Mel Brooks joke.
Yeah. And so the slam cut to a guy reading the newspaper at the station, and it just says the headline is Mets win doubleheader. Because it's like a juxtaposition of like Maxwell being like, that'll never happen. Then slam, it did. Which leads to a really funny... a kid reads that headline, and so Max thinks that this child is possibly Agent 99.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't know who to expect, so...
Yeah, and so he walks over, and he's like...
New York Mets win doubleheader. Any new developments from chaos? What about Dante and the Enthermo? Are you 99?
No, I'm 6 and a half.
Which, again, it's, yeah.
Pretty good.
I think... The thing that I think about Mel Brooks is, like, these style of jokes, but, like, 30 a minute.
They're not so rapid fire. Sometimes you take a break to do a musical number.
But like Robin Hood Men in Tights is very much that style. I like that that is my reference for Mel Brooks as Robin Hood Men in Tights. Definitely everyone's favorite movie of his.
Mm-hmm.
Achoo. But I think everyone, like, that's what I always think of him. So it's, you get that in this episode of Get Smart, but it's also just paced like a 1960s episode of television, so it, like, it takes its time.
Yeah, it's almost unnecessarily slowed down for some reason.
So then we get 99, like, 99 comes and gives the, like, the Mets won a doubleheader. I heard the score was 99-86. And then we meet 99,
mm-hmm.
who is dressed like a car driver.
Yeah, she's dressed like in an old time sort of like livery driver sort of outfit.
But selling the hell out
of it. Yeah, but it's also got like a mod sort of cut to it too. Like it's definitely not from like the uniform store. It's like a go-go inspired like a limousine driver.
It's like she can make that. Honestly, like Barbara Feldon is just, I mean, she is one of the most iconic fashion characters of television history, period.
Yeah, and that's such it's such a great sort of like additional like thing to like check out for this show is like it is actually like very beautiful and visually interesting to look at, like it's not just funny, but like, you know, everybody's dressed really well and like it's always styled really well, like not just costumes but also like the art direction for the thing going forward. Unfortunately, like, a lot of it's lost in black and white in the thing, you know.
Although I did notice, like, so like also I want to talk about like Maxwell is wearing, I wrote down, like, I loved his suit. It's a very like sleek early 60s suit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a three-piece suit, but the vest is double-breasted, and it's like it fits him really well. I'm like, I want that suit. I can imagine it's probably like a nice, like really clear, sharp blue, like maybe like a deep, dark, sharp blue.
Oh yeah.
Ugh, like I loved it. But I also like pointing out that so when Mary Tyler Moore started doing the Mary Tyler Moore Show, they were like trying to figure out what is this character going to dress like. And then she was like, well, we're going to go all out and we're going to, can't remember what her name is and I should have looked it up, but the same woman that dressed Barbara Feldon on Get Smart also dressed Samantha Stevens on Bewitched and then went to do Mary Richards on Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, nice.
Which is like crazy because like those are the three, like if you're going to talk about like three mid-century mod like clothing icons, like it's those three characters and she did all three of them. And I should have written down her name. But I did not. So anyway, when they meet up, Maxwell's immediately like, oh, look in the reflection of my cufflink. There's a chaos agent over there. So he enacts his plan, which is his plan is to go over to the lockers where Agent 34 is just inside.
Yeah.
And it's like, he says, like, we must enact our plan. And the plan is...
Plan Y7.
The plan is 99 and 86 just walk out, and as the Chaos Agent walks behind them, the Agent 34 in the locker just opens up the door and smacks him in the head.
And then drags him in from beneath.
And that's it. That's the entire plan.
It's a great plan. It's a great setup.
I mean, hey, it worked. But you have to wonder, what is 34's day like?
Yeah, I know, too. And, like, the gag starts with, at the very, like, when Max is talking to Chief and says, like, I'm gonna grab my, you know, my specs, my locker key, and my Beretta, and then, like, and the thing is, like, I'm gonna use my locker key, and goes over, and there's just, 34 is just right there, and it's just so startling, and it's so funny. But yeah. I mean, like, he must have to just be position there, not just for 86, but for any other control agents in the New York City area.
Yeah, there's just like a lot. It's the meeting spot of all of them.
That's another part of that sort of like the mundanity of the job of like, sometimes you travel around and you meet up with like the really, you know, the cool looking lady spy in the go-go outfit, and other times you're stuck in the Penn Station lockers waiting for somebody to open up the door.
It'd be really great if there was an episode where it's like I'm on locker duty and the entire episode is just Max. I mean, maybe there is one. I have not seen every episode of Get Smart, and if I have, it's been 20 years.
If they had to do 36 a season and they did 5 seasons.
Yeah, it happened eventually. So then they travel to Crave Haven Labs in Long Island, where they meet... I also love the name Crave Haven.
Crave Haven, yeah.
Why? That definitely sounds like a like a hip burger, like an organic burger place.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'd love to hit up Crave Haven after this.
I'm actually getting pretty hungry, and I would love to go to Crave Haven. Crave Haven's fries are really good. They have, like, garlic on them.
I'm craving them.
I crave the Haven. So they go there, and they find his laboratory assistant, who is, of course, evil.
Yeah.
They don't find that out immediately, but she does, like, a mug to the camera.
Yeah. A very evil mug to the camera.
Neon lights like, I am evil. Fang finds a rubber banana peel, which leads them to...
The novelty company. The South Street novelty
Street
company.
Novelty Inc. So I like that they leave the lab by... They're, like, trying to get out there in a hurry, and Maxwell and Fang jump into the back seat, and they don't get the door closed in time.
Oh, yeah, because the speed of the car is too much for him to shut it.
And so then, like, there's, like, this quick montage of 99 driving this big car with the door open, and you can see, like, an actor, maybe Don Adams, who knows?
It might be.
Yeah, I mean, budget back then. Also, like, insurance and stunts, they probably just did whatever they wanted. And then as soon as he finally gets the door closed is when they get there. And so he has to open it back up again and get out. Which is, again, like, a little weird joke.
It's funny, but it's super funny, too, because he plays it, he's not, like... To me, like, I feel like if you, in my imagination, I feel like now if you do that joke, like, whoever the actor is screaming, like, oh, God, stop, like, let me close it, you know, like.
They're calling more attention to it.
Yeah, probably. It's almost funnier to see him, like, holding on, like, grimacing through it, and as soon as it shuts, it's like, all right, that's done. We can move on now.
Which has the tone of this show is very much, you know, like you said, the mundanity of it. Like, there's kind of almost nothing remarkable about anything there. Like, it's so, yeah, like, of course the door didn't shut. That's just how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, I like the unflappability of the whole thing too, like,
yeah,
that sort of, like, it's all kind of, it is terrible, but, like, he's not, doesn't ever seem to be fazed. And there's some, it's interesting with, like, James Bond when, like, yeah, like, he's doing the impossible, but, like, it's also just kind of hysterical when it's just these dumb little things that, like, shouldn't take down a spy, you know, like a door that can't get shut.
So they go into the novelty shop. This is where we meet one of the bad guys, who is just a tall, creepy, Adam Driver-y looking dude.
Oh my God, yeah, he did look like Adam Driver.
Yeah, he's got, like, very pronounced long features.
He had a very, very modern-y sort of, like, hipsterish beard, too.
Yeah, yeah. He's trying to, so, like, they have the Enthermo Ray, like, across the street, and with chalk, he marks where he needs to get Maxwell Smart to stand, so he'll get blasted by the Enthermo Ray. So then Maxwell comes in, and he, like, it shows him something? I can't remember what he shows him. But he's,
he wants to find receipts for rubber bananas.
Yeah, and so he's got that, and he's, like, he full-on, like, grabs Maxwell and, like, moves his entire body to stand on top of those chalk marks.
Yeah.
But then Fang does his job, because he senses the Enthermo Ray starting up, mm-hmm. and he, like, jumps and, like, gets Maxwell out of the way, and then Adam Driver gets knocked in or, like, stumbles. And then he gets straight-up disintegrated.
Yeah, it's a little, this sequence was a little clumsy to me, because I feel like that big, giant actor, whoever he was, just... didn't seem like that great of a physical actor, you know, and it felt like a very physical sort of comedy meat to play with.
Yeah, it is also weird. I think this is the very first sitcom I've done on this podcast where someone gets disintegrated.
That didn't happen in the Golden Girls?
No, Golden Girls, I mean, Alf will probably come close at some point, but Golden Girls didn't happen. Green Acres, I can also see it happening on Green Acres, but it didn't happen in that episode. But yeah, I mean, it's like, and it's also, there's like smoke and like, there's not even ash left. Like, he's just gone. The Enthermo Ray just like obliterated all of his atoms.
Yeah.
This is an episode with a high body count.
Yeah. Yeah. With, how many people have died? Just the one on screen.
Just him. But then later that entire boat blows up. But most of the henchmen have been knocked off.
Yes.
At this point is where, so 99 is wearing a hat this whole time.
So
Maxwell asks, like, are you okay? And she, like, is taking off her hat, and she's just like, I don't know, takes off her hat. She just takes off her hat. Her hair falls down. And she has, like, a very mod, like, bob. Like, yeah. Bangs on a bob or whatever. And then this is when Maxwell's like, you're a girl. I did not know.
Right.
And then they immediately almost kiss.
Yeah, yeah. That's, like, the thing that felt very 1960s about this whole thing.
Yeah. But I also wonder if that is... I could also see that being a comment on just how easily James Bond gets, like, every woman.
Totally,
like,
yeah.
Like, it's immediate, like, they are making out. And so as soon as he realizes, oh, you're a woman, gotta kiss.
Yeah, it also feels very, like, tacked on for, you know, like, what this pilot must have been, which was just a bunch of jokes, you know, about spy work. I guess he... have to have, like, the femme fatale or the Bond girl character show up at some point. But, yeah, this...
Yeah.
Thankfully, it lasts... This moment lasts for, like, 5 seconds, and then
it's
over.
Yeah, it's very short.
And it's never brought back ever, like, in the rest of the episode, at least.
No. And they... Because they do eventually become an item.
Right.
But that's, like, a slow burn thing. I've seen, like... I think every single episode has a near-miss kiss with the two of them. I think,
yeah.
Like, I've seen, like, the first five, and it's, I mean, it's a running gag. When they eventually get married, you never find out Agent 99's name either, I do believe.
Well, she's a good agent, that's why.
She's actually a good agent.
Yeah, she's staying undercover.
Yeah. So this is where they realize that the rubber banana peel is coming from a dinghy, like, ship outside, a garbage ship, but there are no seagulls because all the garbage is plastic and rubber.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
fake
is,
garbage.
Which is a camouflage.
The old fake garbage trick.
Yeah. So they go out to the boat, and this is where, like, I mean, for me, anytime a show goes on a boat, I'm like, the production value is going up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, shooting on a boat has to be a nightmare. And if you choose to shoot on a boat, like, okay, you are wanting me to notice that. Like, you...
mm-hmm.
That's what I mean, like, That's what I think.
Yeah, it's definitely production value.
Yeah. And so they go there, they meet Mr. Big, who is, of course, a little person.
Yes. And he has an office, you know, a beautiful oaken office in the lower quarters of this very small skip boat.
Yeah, it's a very elaborate headquarters. It's definitely, that's definitely like a TARDIS type situation, like bigger on the, and so he gets them like almost captured, and like this is where Maxwell's other famous line of,
you see, the moment I suspected there was something wrong with this old scow, I immediately telephoned headquarters. And I happen to know that at this very minute, 7 Coast Guard cutters are converging on this boat. Would you believe it? 7.
I find that pretty hard to believe.
Would you believe 6?
I don't think so.
How about 2 cops and a rowboat?
Very good. It's a very good joke.
Very funny.
Yeah, he delivers it very well. What were Inspector Gadget's catchphrases?
Go-go gadget catchphrase.
Go-go gadget catchphrase.
And
go-go gadget Reaganomics.
I don't know if he had many... well, you know, let me look. Well, Dr. Claw's catchphrase was... Oh, he would say wowzers.
Oh, wowzers, okay.
Wowzers. And he did not fight the Agents of Chaos. He fought the Agents of Mad.
Ah.
And, yeah. I think that's it. I think wowzers and Go-Go Gadget. And Inspector Gadget is always on duty.
Okay.
And, yeah.
I think Maxwell Smart is a better agent than... Inspector Gadget, by far.
Who does Inspector Gadget work for?
He works for... There's another chief who's always in a trash can that always explodes.
Yeah, I mean...
I know that. And then his niece is Penny, who has that... What's essentially an iPad.
Exactly, yeah.
Now that I'm thinking about it, she has an iPad. And it solves... It saves the world every time. So, of course, Mr. Big ties up 86 and 99, but after the guards leave, Ooh, Maxwell Smart was wearing his inflato coat, so they actually tied up two inflatable hands.
That's not what I thought the inflato coat gag was going to be at all.
No, that I wrote down inflato coat, and then when that gag happened, I was like, but that can't be the inflato coat, because an inflato coat would be like a coat you wear that when you fall in the water, you... And it
inflate
turns to a raft.
Or like he's gonna activate it now and he's gonna like, you know, push them all off the boat or
right.
You know, push them out of the way or whatever. I don't know. Or fly away. No, didn't expect it to just be two rubber hands.
Maybe the inflato coat, maybe it's a multi purpose inflato coat.
I guess maybe that's why he was so reluctant to take it.
Yeah. I didn't realize though that he did use all three items that he asked for because the glasses to look at the look. I guess that's also how you would write a script.
Well, it's the classic sort of thing of, you know, make sure you go back and they pick them up.
Yeah. So then we get a boat fight, and I could just talk for an hour about
boat fight.
I could talk for an hour about mid-60s action sequences, because Batman is filled with these kind of things, and I just love them.
Yes.
I just love... We are so used to nowadays with the very tight, close-up, like, quick-cut, like, martial arts, like, everyone flipping all around each other. There's something very weirdly satisfying about just seeing a whole bunch of middle-aged people just... in a wide shot, throwing, like, haymakers and, like, really bad judo chops.
A comedy fight is really funny to watch. And this one has probably one of my favorite gags in a comedy fight that I've ever seen was the guy who's already hurt, who's aiming to, like, fall off the boat, and Max just gets out of his way and then pats him on the back.
Yeah. then he tips over.
Yeah, and then he just falls in. Like, it's so great that they, it started out looking like a very lazy comedy fight, and it got even lazier.
Well, there's also a moment where a guy has a baseball bat, and then Maxwell grabs it, and then they do the old, like, that baseball bat game where you, like, put your hand, like, you grab it on top of each other, and then when they get to the top, Maxwell just punches him. Which is, again, like, that's a very
perfect
Batman-y fight move as well.
It's a Bugs Bunny move.
Yeah, it's very Bugs Bunny. I also like, there's a moment where, so 99 is, of course, fighting the female evil villainess. And so they're, like, tussling in the garbage, and it's very much like a Dynasty water fountain fight. Like, they've got each other pinned, and they're, like, there's no punches being thrown. They're just, like, rolling around. And so she yells, "Maxwell, help!" from off camera, but then when you see her again, they're both standing up and 99 just punches the woman off the boat. Which again is just kind of like, okay, whatever goes.
Yeah. It's a pilot.
Yeah. So there's a moment where when the two of them and the doctor and Fang are all climbing up out from the bottom of the boat.
Yeah.
When Maxwell gets out, it's a shot from on high, and you're seeing like Don Adams, a nice like, he's a pretty, like, handsome, cool-looking dude for being a comedian, you know? But he's getting out, and he's in, like, this luxe, like, three-piece suit on a garbage boat holding a big gun. And it's like, this looks really cool.
Yeah.
But then it goes into comedy fight, and it's like, well, that's what Get Smart is. It's like, it's beautiful-looking and then comedy fight. This is where we find out that Dr. Hugo Dante set the Intherma Ray to explode whenever anyone used it.
No, he rigs it to backfire.
Right.
So instead of it destroying the Statue of Liberty, it's going to just explode the boat. And he forgot to tell everybody about that before they got off the boat.
No, it happens. So they get off the boat and then it just blows up. So the body count.
Two.
Yeah, because do you think that explosion probably didn't affect all the people in the water. They're probably fine.
No, they were also dressed in like frogmen scuba gear anyway, so they definitely were able to swim to safety without any like hindrance, as long as they're strong swimmers.
Yeah. So then the episode ends with them on the boat, and Maxwell calls the chief to check in, and he gives like a whole speech.
Smart here. Maxwell Smart. Mission accomplished. Professor Dante rescued. Chaos destroyed. And I take great pride in saying that the forces of evil have once again been foiled in their attempt to extinguish the torch of liberty. That Oh, sorry. Wrong number.
Pretty good.
Obviously. Pretty but then good. We have to talk about the end credits, because the end credits are as iconic as the opening credits.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's also like the show opens with all the doors opening. It show ends with all the doors closing,
mm-hmm.
except for the final one, which delays a bit. And so Maxwell walks up to check on it, and then it closes on his nose.
It almost looks like he's trying to walk back through it and doesn't notice that it's coming. Because like that's the gag that always kind of I never really got, because it's just like if he's checking on the door, certainly he's watching the door. But
yeah, that's the thing.
But why would he be walking through a door if it's already closed? But, like, he does a very good job of acting like it closed on his nose. That's all
yeah.
I know.
Don Adams, he's a genius. Are you ready for some must-have facts about this episode of television?
Sure, hit me.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So the ratings for Get Smart, it's very, as I've said on the podcast, it is impossible for me to find weekly episodic ratings for old TV shows, which sucks because that's the information I crave. But for the season, the rating for the show was 24.5 million viewers.
Wow.
For the 65 to 66 season, so that's a shit ton.
Jeez.
It ranked number 12 for the season, though. The top five shows of the 1965-66 season are Batman. So this is very on brand. This
biggest
is very
show
goofy time.
In the world at that time.
Yep. Four was the Red Skelton Hour. Three was the Lucy Show. Two was Gomer Pyle USMC. And number one was Bonanza. So it's always weird to see, like, the outlier. Get Smart has something in common with Batman, but it has very little in common with, like, the rest of those.
Yeah.
And you're seeing, like, in the mid-60s, what's popular is still, like, variety shows and westerns. And that's not going to change until, like, the late 60s, early 70s.
Lucy's still on TV.
Yeah. That's her... I think that's her second show. The Lucy show was her second one.
With Mr. Mooney?
Yeah. Where she is in... Well, the first half, she works in, like a rural bank. Or something, but then the bank moves to Hollywood in, like, season three, so they can get a bunch of guest stars.
You know, like banks do.
Yeah. Yeah,
the
they transfer
to
the big
Hollywood
bank.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
The bank moved to Hollywood. Good news, everyone. We're closing this branch. I know you all live here, but we're opening up a new branch in Hollywood.
So the NBC Saturday night lineup that this aired as part of...
Yes.
Also crazy. So started with Flipper, then I Dream of Jeannie, then Get Smart, and then NBC Saturday Night at the Movies.
Would they just rerun movies on Saturday Night at the Movies, or was it
yeah,
TV
it was
movies?
A mix. It was a mix of, I think it was a mix of TV movies and then, like, movies.
Okay.
But it, like, those are three wildly ridiculous but incompatible shows.
Like, I don't know. I mean, well, I Dream of Jeannie is also very colorful and goofy. And
Yeah, that's true. Like, Flipper, I Dream of Jeannie, and Get Smart are three shows that are, like, premise.
I don't know what the fuck is going on with Flipper in this list.
Flipper didn't talk. Wait, no. Flipper was Lassie but a dolphin.
Yeah, Flipper's just Lassie with a dolphin. And it's like, and like, I can't name a human from Flipper or Lassie.
No. Well,
I mean,
Timmy.
Timmy, but that's just a character. But yeah. I can't even name a character from Flipper except Flipper.
No. June Lockhart was on Lassie, so that's a big deal. And John Provost. I watched Lassie every day as a kid. That show was on for like 20 years. So this particular episode is the only black and white episode, as we've discussed, that's ever of Get Smart Ever. It was nominated for the Outstanding Writing Emmy, though. So this specific episode, but it lost to the Dick Van Dyke Show episode, Coast to Coast Big Mouth, which is one of the funniest episodes of all time, so that makes sense. I want to check.
The Dick Van Dyke Show?
Yeah.
Wow.
This started at the very end of Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, yeah, well.
Dick Van Dyke Season 5 and Get Smart Season 1 overlapped. Coast to Coast Big Mouth was written by... trying to see. It was written by Bill Persky and Sam Dinoff, but Carl Reiner is a major part in it. Because Laura goes on a TV game show and blabs that Carl Reiner's character, Alan Brady, wears a toupee.
Yeah.
And so it's funny that, like, Carl Reiner's episode beat out Mel Brooks' episode. Didn't affect their friendship. So on the Bob Newhart front, because there always has to be.
Yes.
Tom Poston.
Yeah.
One of Bob Newhart's BFFs and sidekick on the 80s sitcom Newhart almost played Maxwell Smart.
That would have been a completely different
show. Totally different.
Completely different.
So when it was being developed at ABC, apparently, and Tom Poston was attached, but then when it didn't get picked up, NBC wanted it and they wanted Don Adams specifically. So Tom Poston is a goofball. Like, he also... The thing about Don Adams is Don Adams looks like a spy could look.
Sort of. I mean, the first episode, he definitely looks like a stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he almost looks like friends of ours. And then they, like, kind of, you know, zhuzh him up and he looks more like a spy in the color episodes. But, like, yeah, I can't imagine Tom Poston having any sort of sexual chemistry with Barbara Felton at all.
I mean, Tom Poston is, like... a bigger Don Knotts in a way.
Yeah.
Like, he's got the same kind of like big buggy eyes. He's just like taller and he's like a thicker, he's like a fuller man. He's a fuller man. That's weird. But it's weird to think of Tom Poston as being that. But I don't know, young Tom Poston. This is also, you know, 20 years before Newhart, so maybe younger Tom Poston.
Yeah, I feel like
Poston.
If they were like, oh yeah, it's going to be Stephen Wright as Maxwell Smart.
So on IMDb, 240 users rated this episode an 8.2 out of 10. Do you think that's right on the money? Should it go be higher or lower? What would you give it?
I don't know. I guess so. It's hard to tell with internet ratings, you know? I mean, everybody's, like, voting on how much they loved it from back then, right? You know?
Yeah.
But, like...
Also, I would say 240 users is kind of a lot for...
I guess so,
So, like, usually... So, like, the That Girl episode had 36 users, Well, the Will and Grace episode I did had 256.
Okay.
So this is on par with how many episodes, how many people are voting on Will and Grace.
So these are like people who are just like, I have to review every television show.
I love Get Smart, must hop on the message boards.
Not even I love Get Smart, I must make TV thing, must watch TV.
Must.
It's good.
Yeah,
it's good, but it's hard to tell how good it is because of, like, we are so immersed in this sense of humor now, and that, and every, like, all of the innovation in it is not new to us, so I can't see it through that lens, unfortunately, but, like, it's well acted, and it's more well directed than I thought it was gonna be, and even for it being in black and white, it was a lot of fun to watch, and it definitely, I think, except for that weird moment with the hat, with 99's hat and Max noticing her, like, that's the only thing that doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so, it makes me definitely want to, like, dip back in and rewatch it as just something that, like, maybe to refresh my memory and see if it still holds up. you know?
Yeah, that's what I do think that, like, so, I mean, I would probably give this episode, like, a 7-something, just because I think that it's a good start, but I think that it gets a whole lot better. I also wanted to point out, I forgot to point this out, that the episode directed by Howard Morris, who himself was an actor, who was on a shit ton of things, but he's mostly known for, at least to me, by being Ernest T. Bass on The Andy Griffith Show. Who I think was the town drunk, right? Like, that's crazy.
That's the other thing about the 60s television landscape is, like, it's like 35 people.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's this is what he just did that week.
That's amazing, and it's well directed.
Yeah.
It's a well directed piece of television, and there's just stuff that is going on in it that, like, you probably wouldn't be expecting, you know, filmmaking wise.
He was also the voice of Jughead on the '60s Archie cartoon, and he was the voice of Cousin Ambrose on the '70s Sabrina cartoon. So, yeah, he was all over the place.
Yeah.
So, who would you say out of this episode had the must-see performance?
Oh, God, I don't know. Well, Fang was great.
Fang?
I don't know. I mean, like, Barbara Felton definitely stands out, because Don Adams, while he's really funny and definitely is suited for this character, he's not comfortable in it yet.
Yeah.
You know, and he's good at a slow burn, and you can definitely appreciate all of that, and everybody is fantastic in it, but, like, you know, you can see why they wanted Barbara Felton immediately. Like, she's just easy to watch on screen, and she gets, like, exactly what the tone of this show is. So, like, if anything, it's just to kind of see where, you know, this iconic character begins.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'll go on and give it to Fang.
Yes, Fang.
I don't know, Fang's great.
Fang's a standout.
I like when Fang is trying to get out of the... He's trying to get... They're trying to push a real dog through that trap door on the boat. And there's a moment where, like, the dog is like, ah! Like, his arms kind of splay out, and they have to, like, pull this big... He's a big dog.
He's definitely being supported from the bottom to get to get out of there.
He's one of those, come on, guys, we gotta hurry, we're losing our light. must other people see this episode?
Well, I mean, it's definitely worth checking out. I don't know if you should, you know, with everything that you can watch on television these days, you know. But, like, if you like old television and you want to, you know, check something out that is foundational to television comedy.
Oh, definitely.
You know.
Also, if you're a big Mel Brooks and Buck Henry fan.
It's worth checking out. I hadn't seen it until I watched it for this, because I've seen other episodes of Get Smart, but I have not seen this one, and it really does feel like the template episode.
I think you don't must need to see this one, but I will say you probably must need to see, like, a season 3 episode. I wish I was super well versed in Get Smart so I could pick out, like, this is the one to watch, but I bet that by season 3 or 4, like, is when you're probably going to see, like, the show is, you know, probably quicker paced, colorful, characters more developed. Like, I think it's definitely worth checking out, like, a mid-series episode.
Yeah, I think this is, what's nice about Get Smart is that it's from an era of television where you can literally watch any episode of it and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And that is something that I do miss about TV.
Yep.
You know?
I do remember, so, like, it's crazy that I did, so even with these kind of shows, as a kid, I did try to watch them like we watch TV now, because I remember as a kid being very, very invested in the relationship between Major Nelson and Jeannie, and, like, being like, when are they going to get married? Oh, like, and I remember when Nick and I just, like, ran the wedding episode in their normal rotation, like, without fanfare, I remember freaking out, like, it was a big deal for me. Because I was like, finally, I'm seeing the wedding. I think that also maybe, I have a vague memory that I think might be a real memory. I don't know, it's like one of those, like, brain spinning tricks on you. But I feel like I always wanted to watch the Get Smart wedding episode because I was dying to know what 99's name was. And I figured they have to say her name at the wedding episode. So I think also trying to catch the Get Smart wedding episode was a big deal for me as a kid. And now I don't know if there really was one or if they saved that for the movie or... I don't know. Anyway, jump in wherever, people. Thank you for coming on and talking about Get Smart with me.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for giving me incentive to revisit the show and check it out.
Well, yeah, and maybe it'll inspire you to like write more spy stuff, because we always need more spy comedy.
Yeah, there's so much spy stuff that hasn't been done yet.
Yeah, need more more gadgets that are preposterous and don't do what their name implies.
I wonder what real spies... watch for entertainment.
Top Chef.
Yeah, probably Top Chef.
Have you been to the Spy Museum in DC?
No, I didn't get to go when I was in DC.
So I went and I was shocked to see that all of this shit is kind of real.
Right.
Like they actually had like cigarettes that are guns and stuff like that, which is insane. They're like, in 1960, they're like, yeah, we can fit a gun in a pack of cigarettes. Like, what?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great. So I highly suggest this podcast is totally sponsored by the Spy Museum. Just kidding. where can people follow you on the internet or talk to you about Get Smart or check out all of your junks?
Well, I am on various social media platforms at Adam Bozarth. And you can follow Left-Handed Radio on Instagram and SoundCloud and Twitter and various other places at Left-Handed Radio. That's where you can find all the good stuff. And any other news be on my social stuff. And yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Well, until next time, I don't have a sign-off. So I don't know where I was going with that. I'll holler at you later.
Stay tuned.
And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, Adam Bozarth, for dropping by and talking about Get Smart with me this week. Next time, I'll be discussing the Designing Women episode, Grand Slam Thank You Ma'am. Grand Slam Thank You Ma'am is in Season 1. This is Episode 21, Designing Women Season 1, and you can purchase that... on DVD, because it's not streaming anywhere, which is a true shame. Until then, I want to hear from all of you. Tweet your questions about sitcoms to @MustHaveSeenTV. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr @MustHaveSeenTV. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review Must Have Seen TV in Apple Podcasts. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram @BrattWhite. Read the words that I write at Decider.com. The theme song is Apollo Throwdown by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all y'all for listening. And I'll see you next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.